with a series entitled The Land Between. Today is our second last class. We'll close out next week. The context of our story, maybe if you're visiting with us, let me just bring you up to speed if you're visiting for the first time. The context of our story is that the Israelites, God's people, were enslaved in Egypt. They were treated very badly by the Egyptians for many, many years, and they were crying out to God for redemption. They were crying out that he would rescue them, that somehow he would help them out of this. And so he sends Moses, his servant, who didn't really want to take up the task, well, not really, he flat out didn't want to take up the task, to lead them out. And so they were supposed to go from Egypt to Canaan, the promised land. And as we've seen historically, it was sort of from green space to green space if you look on a satellite map. And now in Numbers 11, you can turn there. In Numbers 11, we are 2 years into the story, and these guys are still not in the new green space. They're in the land between, the desert. For us, the time of difficulty. That phone call in the middle of the night that shocks you. Maybe sometimes the slow erosion of time where suddenly you just realize over the years my marriage has gone backwards. I don't even know how I got here, whether in my marriage or spiritually or a wayward child. There are many things that shifts us into the land between. But that's where they are. They're 2 years in. They were hungry. God gave them a food substance called manna. But they've had it for breakfast, lunch, and supper endlessly. They are tired of it. They are sick of this meal, and they are sick of being in the land between. And Numbers 11, verse 4, it says, the rabble with them began to crave other food. In other words, please, God, not manna. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions. And oh, there was that garlic, maybe even with a little parmesan on the side. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this. What is it? Manna. We're sick and tired of the manna. And they are crying out saying, we want meat. They're grabbing Moses. I picture, I don't think he had a jacket, but they're grabbing him by the jacket saying, we want meat. We looked at 2 weeks ago at how Moses responds to this. He doesn't know what to do. He's having a meltdown, okay, an anxiety attack of note. He goes to God in prayer in Numbers 11, verse 12. He says to God, he prays to God, and he says, did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land that you promised on an oath to their ancestors? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you're going to treat me, please go ahead and kill me right now. We even feel the... Ever felt that? Not the shock. Too heavy. What I'm going through is too heavy. For me personally, there is a whole lot of things happening in my life currently simultaneously. And there's been often times during the last couple of weeks, not often, almost every night, where I go to bed, I close my eyes, and I just say, God, it's too heavy. It's too heavy. The burden is too heavy. God listens to Moses, he hears him, and he realized that this poor dude is taking an enormous amount of strain, and he's going to help him. In Numbers 11, verse 16, it says, the Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come out to the tent of meeting that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there. Now, I would be in panic right there. And I will take of the spirit that is on you and put the spirit on them. They will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. So today I'm asking for 70 volunteers. I'm kidding. We have many volunteers for which we're very grateful. Moses must probably have a sense of relief. Thank you, God. I don't have to do this alone. There are others with me. The burden is going to be lifted and lifted very soon. But will they bring meat? Because the people are still asking, where is our meat? Verse 18, God says, tell the people, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat me. Wonderful. All the complaining and the nagging and the meltdown, everything has paid off. Tell them, the Lord heard you when you wailed. If only we had meat to eat. We were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat to eat and you will eat it. That doesn't sound good. Verse 19. You will not eat it for just one day, or 2 days, or 5, 10, or 20 days. But for a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it. Why? Because you have rejected the Lord who is among you. And you have wailed before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? What do you learn from this? The land between is fertile ground for God's discipline. And sometimes that discipline, as we're going to see, and I try to pray and think through how I could put a positive spin on this, but there is no positive spin. It can be severe. Numbers 11:31. Now a wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea, little birdies. It scattered them up 2 cubits deep all around the camp as far as a day's walk in any direction. All that day and night and all the next day, the people went about and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers, and they spread them out around the camp. God uses his power. He drives a quail migration into the camp. They're everywhere. They're like knee height. You can hit them with a bat. And it says that everyone, the equation there is about, everyone gets about a bucky load of this stuff. And they spread them out amongst the camp to dry. The people have what they want. And the crisis seems to be over. But is it? Let's see what happens next. Verse 33. But while the meat was still between their teeth, and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. Therefore, the place was named Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who craved other food. Did you see that? People died. The quail arrived, but so did the plague. And people died. This is tough stuff. The land between is a very difficult terrain to navigate. But often we make it more difficult and painful than it needs to be. Our actions, reactions, overreactions can compound the situation. They ended up getting the meat and the meal that they wanted, but when it arrived, it was a spoiled meal. Let me ask you something. Are you making your land between harder than what it needs to be? Now, it happens in so many ways. You're not living in the house you want, not driving the car you want, not having the life that you want, and it seems like you're moving in the slow lane, and all your friends are passing by on the fast lane. And so you decide, let me scheme, let me figure, let me budget, let me see how I can milk this poor budget of mine to somehow buy the bigger house, the bigger car, or the clothes, or the furniture, whatever it is, go on the holiday that I feel like I deserve. Let me see if I can do that. And you buy that house, you buy the car, you go on that holiday, but you didn't contemplate the extra payments. You didn't think of the extra rates and taxes, the extra maintenance, the extra this and the extra that. And before you know it, you can barely breathe financially. And you're worse off at the end than what you were in the beginning. You got the meal that you wanted, but it's a spoiled meal. We did it in so many ways. You become a Christian as a single and you think, you know what, I'm going to make Jesus Lord, Savior, Master, King of my life. The only person that I'll get married to is someone who feels the same way. Someone who also has him as Lord, as Master, and as King. But the years roll by. Your options are limited. It doesn't seem like things work out. And you start to put some demands on God and say, well, God, listen, I've waited. And I've waited. And I've waited. And it's been years. I'll give you a couple of months maybe. And let's see what you do. But if you don't, I will do what needs to be done. A guy at work gives you attention, a colleague, a friend, a neighbor. You start spending time, start dating, get married, get the meal that you wanted. A year later, things start falling apart. It's a spoiled meal because you're now with someone who does not love God above all else. The land between is a difficult terrain. But we often make it more difficult than what it needs to be when we try to take things into our own hands. I must say, wow, that's all very interesting stuff, and it seems like I can learn some of that. But what about the fact that people died? Are we going to get back to that? That the people want something else than bread, and they get killed for it? I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound very Jesus-y to me. Isn't that a little bit over the top? Now, your two-year-old throws a tantrum. What do? Spank him. Your teenager, God forbid, I know they never do, but they throw a tantrum. What do? Take away their phone? Ground them? You don't kill them. Or do you? Can you? Doesn't all of this killing just sound a little bit harsh? So why the killing? Let's look again at the passage and see if we can get to the heart of the crime. If this was really about cafeteria food or whether it was actually about something else. Numbers 11:18. The Lord heard you when you wailed. If only we had meat to eat, we were better off in Egypt. Again, verse 20. Why did we ever leave Egypt? They're not complaining about cafeteria food. What they're saying to God is they're looking at him and saying, we were better off in Egypt. We were better off as slaves. We were better off without you. We were. With all your issues, expectations, demands. Therefore, Moses responds in verse 20 and he says to them, you have rejected the Lord who is among you. He says, that's what you've done. This is not about food. God is trying to work in your life. He's trying to teach you things and you have rejected the Lord who is among you. Now, what you have to understand, he's not talking about God figuratively being with us. You know, we say today, this. Where two or three gather, there I am. God is with us in spirit. They had a different deal going back then. The camp, the whole Israelite camp, was set up around a center point. There were 12 tribes in Israel. They had three tribes to the north of the center point, three to the east, three to the west, and three to the south. And right in the middle of the camp was the tabernacle, the tent of meeting that had a place called the Most Holy of Holies. And that Most Holy of Holies was the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant were the Ten Commandments. And that space and place was a porthole to God. He literally descended into the space. He literally lived among them.
It was His presence that delivered them from Egypt. It was His presence that fed them. It was His presence that gave them that cloud over them by day and the pillar of fire to guide them by night. He was right there amongst them, and they are saying, we were better off in Egypt. We were better off without you. They're not complaining about food. This is treason. Cosmic treason. We were better off without you as our rescuer. Better off without your presence. Better off with the gods of Egypt. These guys, to say the least, were in bad shape. Now remember, if we think back to one of our previous classes, what God was trying to build into them in the first place. Trust. Why trust? Because trust is the glue that keeps relationships together. And around every corner, He was whispering to them, will you trust me? When He sent Moses to rescue them, will you trust me? When they're faced with the Red Sea, will you trust me? When they were thirsty, will you trust me? Will you trust me? These guys were an unruly mob of former slaves indoctrinated in generations of idol worship. They're 2 years in and they are nothing but ready or fit to enter the promised land. Not in that condition. They didn't know God, nor did they trust Him. They were stuck. When they faced the Red Sea with Pharaoh coming from behind, what did they say? Why did you bring us in the desert to kill us? When they went through the Red Sea and they were thirsty, what did they say? Why did you bring us in the desert to kill us? After that, when they were hungry, what did they say? Why did you bring us in the desert to kill us? They were thirsty again. Why did you bring us in the desert to kill us? We were better off in Egypt. Better off without you. Their problem was not that they made a mistake. Their problem was that they made the same mistake again and again and again and again. And they didn't learn from their pain. Ever been there? Often, I think for myself and I've seen it in others, our greatest heartache does not come from the pain and the land between. But it comes from the refusal to learn from it. Now, through the years, someone will come to me and say, oh man, we're drowning in debt. Drowning in debt. We can't pay the bills. We're scrambling. It's this, it's that. It's just everything is too much, too much, too much, too much, too much. And I've literally seen this happen a number of times through my life. And then a month later, they arrive with a brand new car. And you think, how did you do that? How did you do it? 2 weeks ago, you're sitting saying, drowning. Now you're making more debts. They're experiencing pain, but not learning from it. And they're repeating it again and again and again. How much pain do we need to experience before we change? Spiritually, marriage, anything. How much pain must we experience before we change? How much pain did they have to experience before they would change? The tragedy of their story is not their constant pain, but that pain went wasted. They ignored God's warnings. And the whole generation, possibly a million or more people, was in jeopardy of missing out on the promised land. They've been rescued out of Egypt. They've been rescued from the Red Sea. They've been rescued from thirst, from hunger. They had the pillar of fire. They had the pillar of cloud. They literally had God in their midst. They are 2 years into their journey. They're at the gateway of the promised land. They are no longer beginners in their journey. But they're still acting like they are beginners. And they seem no closer to God than what they were right at the beginning. We do not, we cannot, and we will not trust you. They have not changed over a period of 2 years in spite of God literally living in their presence. Let me ask the teens, who of you have ever seen one of these things? Let's see if, okay. Who knows what that is?
That is an iPod of the 1960s. Okay, that is where most of your parents grew up listening to. It's a record player, and then the records that would go into that baby would be about this big. You got a single one. It was literally called a 7 or something. It was a single track. It literally had one song on it, and it would be this big. Often what would happen with these things, and again, the older folk can attest to this most likely, is sometimes when the record got damaged, it would form sort of a scratch or a groove in it, and then the song would get stuck in it. And it goes, and it plays that same tune again and again and again and again, over and over and over. And what you needed to do is you either just, depends on where your anger levels were at, you just bump it, right? You bump it to dislodge it, and then it bounces, and the song continues. These guys were in a groove like that. Same tune. We will not trust you. 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 We will get what we demand. We will get what we demand. We will get what we demand. We were better off in Egypt. We were better off in Egypt. We were better off without you. They had to get out of the groove. They demanded meat, and God was going to give it to them, consequences and all. He had to dislodge them. He had the hope, I believe, that somehow, that there would be a massive bump. He tried a bump before, but they needed a bigger bump. He had to dislodge them. And sometimes I think he does the same with us. He gives us what we want, plus the consequences, plus what follows. It's not because he hates us. It's because he's able to see the bigger picture that we can't. He sees what's coming around the corner. He realizes we are completely heading in the wrong direction. He's thinking, if you keep on going, you will be completely destroyed. I will do whatever I have, even if it seems harsh in your eyes, to somehow dislodge you and save the day. What was around the corner for these guys? In Numbers chapter 13, only two chapters later, they are now literally at the gateway of the promised land. And Moses sends out 12 spies, one from each tribe, to go and spy, to go and check out the promised land. Does it indeed flow with milk and honey? He says to them, go and see. Go and see what the fruit is like. Go and see what the soil is like. Go and see whether it's fortified. Let's go and look at their military capacity, what they're able to do or not do. The spies come back. Richie, just Numbers 11, people die. Two chapters later, the spies come back, 12 of them. 10 of them brings back this report, Numbers 13, verse 27. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. And they bring this massive cluster of grapes that a couple of men had to carry on a pole. They say, look at it, here it is. All the great stuff, milk and honey, everything. It is as God has promised. It's right there. Verse 28, but the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. These were rumored giants. Verse 33. We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. The land we explore devours those living in it. All the people there were of great size. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. Can you see the groove? Chapter 14, that negative complaining spirit spreads throughout the camp. Verse 1, that night, all the members of the community raised their voices together and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, if only we had died in Egypt or in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. God says enough. Enough. Each and every one of you of military age that saw what I did in Egypt, how I delivered you, that saw how I opened up the Red Sea, that ate of that manna, that saw how I fed you, that saw that pillar of cloud and that pillar of fire. Each of you that saw that, you will never enter my rest. Never. You will all die in the desert, one by one, for 38 years. This is what I believe God tried to avoid in the first place by sending the plague. He was saying, worse is coming, but you're not listening. You're not hearing me. I'm saying, Mayday, Mayday. They're not hearing. Let me kill people because it would only be a few lives versus a million lives. And prayerfully, it will shock them. But it doesn't. God intended his discipline to be corrective. He was willing to inflict great pain on them in order to prevent astronomical pain. His harsh discipline was not because he did not love them. Rather, it was because he did love them. The plague was so severe as his last resort of intervention. It was, you could say, a rescue operation to dislodge them from the groove. The land between is not fun. Not by a long shot. But Hebrews 12 says, endure hardship as discipline. For God is treating you as children. Children that he's trying to rescue. And often we try and help our kids and they don't know what we're doing. They think we're mean with all the spanking. But we see they're on a path. It says, for what children are not disciplined by their fathers? Which children? Children who do not have loving fathers. Now, often when I'm on a plane and I travel without my beautiful children, and when they were young, we had the same experience where they obviously their ears ache when they're babies, what have you. And now there are parents on this plane. And if you've ever flown, I'm sure you've experienced this. I've flown at all hours of the day to try and sometimes avoid this, but it's always there. There's some of the other kid screaming, ravingly mad, whining, throwing tantrums. And what is the parent trying to do? Shh, shh, shh. Shh, shh, shh. I feel like I want to walk up to them, tap them on the shoulder and say, shh, 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 shh. They need a spanking. I know some great books that you can read. I can even put you in touch with people. But the shh, 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 shh. It's not going to do it. All they need, a spanking can solve all your problems. And not now. They need spankings all the time. And if you give them spankings all the time and you do it in the right and loving way, then you wouldn't even have to give the spank right here. As parents, we often forget that we're not raising children. We are raising adults. And it's our job to not only raise compliant children, it is our job to raise children that will not think that the world centers around them. Why? Left to themselves. Self-centered children have a way of becoming narcissistic employees, neighbors, husbands, and wives. And the goal of disciplining our kids is to correct that behavior early while the stakes are still low. A tantrum on a plane. It's not crashing the plane. Depending on what mood the pilot is in. But the stakes keep on rising as the child grows. As they date. As they get married, as they have influence in the lives of more and more people, the possible damage grows. God's discipline has a redemptive purpose. Verse 11 says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time. The land between seems horrible. It says, but it's painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. For those who have been trained by it. Not for those who went through the land between, who had the difficult time. For those who allowed the difficult time to shape them and train them
the way that God intends. Tough story. Tough discipline. Why is it even in the Bible? In 1 Corinthians 10, Paul says this, and we'll close out with this. He says, referring back to this very story, it says, these things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us. Do not despise or hate your time of difficulty. Do not try and make your own way out of it. Don't make demands. Don't make accusations. Rather, I think it would be wise for us to say, God, I know you are at work in my life, always, but specifically, right here, right now, and in this situation. And I know that you're trying to redeem and you are trying to rescue. I beg of you, in your mercy, open the eyes of my heart that I can see what it is that you are doing so that I can work with you and not against you. Because I too want that harvest of peace and righteousness that you promise to us all. I hope we do not despise the land between, but we'll learn, as hard as it is, to embrace it. God bless. Amen.